Each semester here at Wyoming Catholic College, we hold an all-school seminar. All students, all faculty, and any interested staff read the same work and meet in groups led by our seniors to discuss what they've read. This fall's all-school seminar was Plato's dialogue between Socrates and Ion. This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, and you're listening to the After Dinner Scholar from Wyoming Catholic College. In the dialogue, Socrates greets Ion, a rhapsode, that is, a reciter of poetry. Ion specializes in the works of the epic poet Homer, in the Iliad and the Odyssey. When Socrates meets him, he's returning from a religious festival where, in competition with other rhapsodes, he took first prize for his recitation. I asked Dr. Papadopoulos to tell us a little more about Socrates and Ion's conversation.
The Ion is a short dialogue between Socrates and a man named Ion, whose profession is a rhapsode. And a rhapsode is not a poet exactly, but someone who performs the great poets, the great poems, the epic poems. And in Ion's case, he performs the Homeric epics before a crowd. And he's actually come fresh from a great festival where he carried off the first prize. So he's an award-winning reciter of Homeric epics. Socrates encounters him, asks him where he's coming from, learns that he's come from this festival where he won first prize, and then proceeds, as Socrates is wont to do, to interrogate him about the thing which Ion professes to be an expert in, the thing which Ion is recognized in this case to be an expert in, which is the recitation of these epic poems. In particular, Ion claims not only to recite well, but also to understand what is meant by the poet, what Homer actually means. So he doesn't just know all the lines in the right order and can perform them well, but he claims to be able to interpret them. And Socrates sort of sets a trap for Ion in the very first few passages of the dialogue, leading Ion to claim this kind of expertise in knowledge of Homer and Homer's meaning. And from there, we go into Socrates showing Ion over the course of just a few pages that he actually doesn't know very much at all about the topics that Homer covers. It's quite an odd dialogue because in reading it, you might think there's something ridiculous about Socrates' claims and Ion's acceptance of his claims. That Homer, by depicting, say, all of these chariot races or battles in which chariots are used, that Homer must be a kind of technical expert in charioteering. But Ion goes along with that and is shown to think he knows more than he actually does. I think it's helpful to see this dialogue as an example of what Socrates reports in the Apology. In the Apology, he tells a story about how a friend of his went to the oracle at Delphi, asked who the wisest man in the world was, and was told that there is not no mortal wiser than Socrates. Socrates' reaction to that, which he recounts in the Apology, is that he can't really believe it. He doesn't feel himself to be the wisest man. There are all these experts around. And so Socrates says he goes from expert to expert. He sees the politicians, the poets, and craftsmen, and learns in each case that they all think they know more than what they actually do know. Again, Ion himself is not a poet proper. He's a reciter of poems, but it seems to fit into that genre where Socrates is going around to the different authorities in Athens and discovering that none of them are quite as authoritative as they think they are.
Well, Ion also sort of sees himself as a critic of poetry. He claims that Homer is the best of all poets. Socrates challenges that or asks him why he thinks that. And he talks about other poets. He knows Homer's the best of all poets, but he really doesn't know anything about any of the other poets. In fact, when other poets are discussed, he says, I typically snooze out.
Yes, so you have to start to wonder whether Ion thinks Homer is the best poet just because Ion knows Homer well. And so by claiming that Homer is the best poet, he's actually inflating his own importance as the expert of Homer. It very well could be the case that Homer is the best poet, but Ion might not know the reason for that or might not be justified in saying that. there's a little indication of this ridiculous pridefulness of Ion at the very beginning of the dialogue, where Socrates says, "You know, Ion, many times I've envied you rhapsodes, your profession. Physically, it is always fitting for you and your profession to be dressed up to look as beautiful as you can." And then he goes on to describe what the rhapsodes actually do and how they know the poetry that they're reciting. But the first thing Socrates comments on is their physical appearance. They always go around looking very well made up. And so that, I think, is put in context with the rest of the dialogue is an indication that Socrates knows Ion is full of himself and knows that Ion cares a great deal about how he is perceived. And even though he falls asleep when other poets are mentioned, he's just waiting around for the conversation to come back to Homer so that he, Ion, can show off.
Mm-hmm. Well, while Ion admits that charioteers know more about chariot racing than he does, and doctors know more about medicine and so on, he insists that because he knows the Iliad, he could be a great general. Tell us about that part of the dialogue.
Well, it's all set up by the beginning, where Socrates runs through the different kinds of topics that Homer covers. And he says that Homer speaks about war, about men in society, about the gods, about heaven and hell, and about the births of the gods and of heroes. And so Socrates shows at the beginning of the dialogue that he's very aware that Homer is the great authority. Homer, and by extension the epic poets, are the authorities in the Greek cities at the time for all of the most important matters to do with human life and even with the divine. Towards the end of the dialogue, when they come around to discussing generalship, Ion is shown to be silly, and perhaps more than silly, but even unjust in claiming that by being a rhapsode of Homer's poems, he is equipped to be the greatest general. Socrates then asks, why aren't you serving the city as a general? If you're such a great general, why aren't you putting your expertise as general to the service of your city? And this is a very odd response that Ion gives. He says, "Socrates, my city is governed and commanded by you, by Athens, so we don't need a general." So that's his excuse, that it's actually because my city is not independent from your city that my city doesn't need my services. One could respond to Ion, Socrates doesn't, but one could respond to Ion, wouldn't your city need you all the more if your city is being ruled by a foreign power, in this case by Athens? But the conversation doesn't go that way. He goes on to say, neither your city nor Sparta would choose me for a general. You think you're good enough for that yourselves. And so by the end of the dialogue, Socrates has persuaded Ion, it seems, that Ion doesn't actually know or have mastery of these topics that are discussed in Homer. But he gives Ion an easy out, which is that he says, and he develops in probably the most interesting section of the dialogue, which we'll talk about in a minute, that Ion is indirectly inspired by the gods. And so he says that he's someone divine. Rhapsodes are divine persons, not masters of a profession. And if Ion were to claim that he was a master of a profession, including master of generalship, then he would be open to the charge of being unjust by not putting his services to the good of his city. But Ion rests content with this kind of backhanded compliment from Socrates, which is, you're inspired by the gods, and that's why you don't know what you're talking about, is because the gods are the ones who have the knowledge, and you are a vessel, or more properly, Homer is a vessel, and you are just repeating what Homer says. So you don't actually have knowledge of the things that you talk about.
I mean, is that a backhanded compliment, or is that rather a large compliment?
I think that it's a backhanded compliment. I think if you put Ion in context with the other Platonic dialogues, I think this is what's going on. The poets are the recognized authorities on all important matters, human and divine. During Socrates' lifetime and during Plato's lifetime, their authority is starting to be challenged by sophists and perhaps also by the natural scientists, the pre-Socratic philosophers who are exploring the nature of the cosmos, the nature of matter and change and so on. But Socrates emerges as a new kind of authority. He actually emerges in Plato's dialogues as a new epic hero. His labors are compared to the labors of Hercules. His prowess is compared to the prowess of Achilles. His journey in the Republic is compared to the descent of Odysseus into the underworld. And Socrates' great task as this new philosophic epic hero will be to establish philosophy as a new and rightful authority to speak somewhat independently of other authorities, to speak on matters concerning human life and even the gods. In the Republic, he coins the word theology, that we now have theology. And so I think what's happening in the Ion, and this is depicted in the drama of the dialogue, not just the conversation, but the way the characters relate to one another and how that changes over the course of the dialogue, there's a kind of struggle or contest between Ion and Socrates. About midway through the dialogue, Socrates says that they should discuss a particular passage in Homer. And Socrates says, doesn't Homer speak about chariot driving? For example, I'll show you if I can remember the lines. And Ion interrupts him and says, no, I'll recite them. I do remember these lines. Socrates asks him for the lines. Ion gives it to him. And then over the course of the next page, Socrates demonstrates that Ion doesn't actually know from those lines what the art of charioteering is. And then in the remaining dialogue, the last third of the dialogue, every time there's an opportunity to discuss a line from Homer, Socrates is the one who recites it. And Ion has become quite submissive and quite defeated in the face of Socrates' analysis of the poetry and Socrates' own knowledge of the lines from Homer. So all that's to say, by the end of the dialogue, Socrates has become the rhapsode. Socrates is actually unseated Ion, and Socrates is the one who's reciting lines from Homer to Ion, the award-winning rhapsode. And not only can he do that, he can do it in a sort of rationally oriented way, where he can analyze lines and come to understand them. He does not try to do what Ion does, which is appeal to the crowd and embody the proper pathos of each line, which is what a good rhapsode would do. But I think he is, in that way, he is trying to unseat poetry as the exclusive authority over human and divine matters so that he can make the case in other dialogues for philosophy, that this philosophic way of going about asking questions that Socrates practices can actually say something authoritative about how human beings should live and what the nature of the gods is.
So what then is his feeling about poetry? That it's a has-been or a both-and?
I think the best place for this is actually in the Republic. What's most famous in the Republic with poetry is Socrates' criticism of it, criticism of imitation, and also criticism of the moral content of Homer's poetry. But there are other comments that he makes in the course of that dialogue that show his, I think, great reverence for the great poets, for Homer, and disdain for contemporary interpreters of Homer, which fits with the criticism of Ion. Socrates says in the Republic that he and Homer have been friends since birth, or friends since he was a young man. Homer is someone intimate to Socrates. He grew up reciting the Homeric poems as other Athenians did. And he also makes the case at one point when he's censoring the content of the Homeric poems that it may be that these poems mean something other than what they seem. He's saying we can't allow stories about gods fighting with one another to be taught to our youth because they will take the wrong message from it. And he says whether those stories are told with a hidden sense or without a hidden sense, the young people can't distinguish between those more subtle or you could say metaphorical meanings to these stories about the gods doing battle with one another. There may be some great truth that's actually being conveyed by this profound, perhaps divinely inspired mind, Homer, but the problem is that there's no good common way of interpreting them. And so people take the wrong lessons from them. I think ultimately Socrates and Plato establish themselves as peers of Homer and the epic poets, not as simply overthrowing them. But I think in order to do that, they have to, in the case of the Ion, somewhat ruthlessly criticize the contemporary authorities on the poets by showing that they really don't understand the poets that they profess to be devoted to.
How does all this fit into our education here at Wyoming Catholic College?
I think it was a great opportunity in the all-school seminar to, in the case of the freshmen, to encounter Plato for the first time, because they're, or almost the first time. They get him a little bit in philosophy early in the semester, and then around now in humanities in their first class in freshman year. And for all the upperclassmen to revisit Plato through a short dialogue where we have the leisure to read him quite carefully and see not only these interconnections that I was pointing to, but also to see all of the little twists and turns and details of a Platonic dialogue. Plato's a very careful writer, and even in some of these seemingly unserious comments or in the dramatic aspects of the dialogue that he writes into his philosophic works, he's trying to convey something. He is a dramatist as well as a philosopher. There's an old story that Plato, before he met Socrates, was trying to become a poet, and then he burned all of his poetry once he met Socrates. But what he wound up doing was then writing a new kind of poetry after his encounter with Socrates. He writes these philosophical stories, or stories depicting conversations. I think it was a great opportunity for the students to return to a Platonic work and read it carefully and see again just the greatness of Plato's art as author.
Poets, said Socrates, utter great and wise things which they do not themselves understand. Perhaps that's why great poetry always appears new. Greater depths open up than we had previously seen. All the great books are like that. The works of Homer, Aristotle, Virgil, St. Thomas, Dante, Melville, Tolstoy, Dostoevsky, and of course Plato utter great and wise things that can be pondered to great benefit over a lifetime. And the great books are, of course, the core of our curriculum here at Wyoming Catholic College. As we head to the end of 2021, will you consider an end-of-the-year gift to the college as we immerse our students, quote, in the primary sources of the classic liberal arts tradition, the grandeur of the mountain wilderness, and the spiritual heritage of the Catholic Church, close quote. Thank you in advance for your generosity. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.